Wrestling Daft presents The Daft Sheet. Look in my eyes, what do you see? Not fucking CM Punk on TNT. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Wrestling Daft Sheet. I, as always, am your editor-in-chief, Chris Jack, and I am joined this week by Steve Roach and Lewis McNaughton, my trusted journal buddies, to go through the best and worst of the week in wrestling as we look to fill the Daft Sheet. Lads, great to have yous on this week. How's things been for yous?
Same old, mate. It's been a wild couple of weeks for wrestling, hasn't it?
It has been wild.
Just getting round to finishing it.
I know, I'm starting to catch up on most of it, just from the weekend there, both in and outside the ring. Other than that, it's been a pretty okay couple of weeks. And the weather's turned babyface again, which is quite nice.
I was just in time for the rain's going back to school. It's sunny, everyone's in a sunny disposition, and there's absolutely nothing in the world of wrestling that could turn it dull again, because it is never dull in the world of wrestling. And I think particularly this week, as we look back at what's been going on, this has probably been the most anti-dull period that we've had in quite a long time. Now, before we get into hitting the headlines and filling the Daft Sheet, I am currently in the middle of a house move. Thanks to the wonderful people at Openreach and BT, we are live through full fibre broadband for the cording tonight. So that got me thinking about, you know, what could a big icebreaker thing be this week. And initially I thought, you know, it being the big move, I was going to ask you guys what your favourite wrestling move is, your favourite big move in the ring would be. But Steve, you came up with a much better one, which has probably got a bit more mileage, which is, what is the best house show that you guys have ever been to? So Steve, we'll come to you first. What's your favourite house show you've ever been to?
It'll be the house show from 2004 at the Brayhead Arena. I think it was the first time, or even only the second time, that WWE came to Glasgow. I think prior to that, it was 92, 93, the one that Rab and John always go on about on the main show. So it was a big, big deal. And the card was pretty decent. It was a really good lineup. Cena, he was the hot new thing at the time. He was at it, he wrestled on it. I think he was US champ at the time. Main event was Eddie Guerrero in the Big Show. And if you told me at the time, only a year and a bit later, Eddie Guerrero would have passed, I would never believe you, because he was right in his prime. He was WWE champion. He was in the midst of that hot run. You know, retroactively looking, it's something I cherish more and more, because I got to see Eddie Guerrero wrestle as well.
Aye.
And also the house shows, like WWE house shows, are traditionally, even then, were meant to be like family friendly. There wasn't a lot of family friendly stuff going on. You had Paul Heyman, he came out and cut a promo calling us all fat wankers. I mean, he's one to talk, but hey, it was quite funny. And also JBL just cut a promo saying Scottish people are all ugly, dumb, stupid, and are just England's bitching on us.
The culture wars really good fun.
Aye.
Good stuff. And what about yourself, Lewis? What was the best house show you've ever been to?
Steve, when did you say that one was with JBL?
2004. It was right off the back of WrestleMania 20.
Was that in Aberdeen?
No, this was SCCC. I think there probably was one in Aberdeen at the same time.
I went to the Aberdeen one. That was my first ever house show. I was six. That'll make you feel a little bit older.
Jesus, you wee dick.
No, but I was one of my favourite ones, because I mind JBL at it, and I mind, I don't know whether Undertaker, I think Undertaker was there, but I remember I was wearing that. He was at the Aberdeen one anyway. And I was wearing all there was. It was a bit like, it's quite fitting. There wasn't any kids-sized shirts there at the event. A little bit like all in. So I had to buy an adult small, and it's a Rikishi one, and it still fits me now. That was one of my favourite ones. Or the last one I went to, which was actually, I think it was October last year at the Hydro, Ravy Davy was outside it flogging his wrestling school, which started the night off wild. I was like, oh, I'm Davy. I was absolutely pissing him up. And that continued because one memory I'll have forever is the New Day won their match, or the way to win their match, and everyone was cheering and it went completely silent. The moment I went, "Kick his fucking cunt in, Xavier!" I stood up and shouted it. And he was like, he was pointing and trying to see who it was. He was like, "Stand up, stand up." So my hand was up, everyone cheering away. And as he was going down the ramp, he was pointing at me. He was like, "Mon, mon, mon." And I went and he gave us a hug on the way down. So that's a
nice
memory, I'll never forget. So either one of those two, it was wild.
Class. Just right.
The third one.
This is why Scotland's trying to get him, mate.
No, the last one was just when Triple H came out and joined the Shield. I was at that one as well. That was a belter. So
that's
one
a famous
of
one as well.
I was lucky to get that.
The last one I went to was back 2017. It was when Jinder Mahal was champ, or he was just about to become champ. I remember, it was just before it, because I remember he'd already been announced as number one contender the previous week in SmackDown. And I was arguing with two guys going, "They're not going to put a belt on Jinder. Don't be stupid." Lads, they're doing it. Like, they've already confirmed they've got this big new media deal in India. When they go, India's their third biggest market after us and obviously the US. They're serious about exploring the Asian market. Mate, I'm telling you, it's going to happen. And then they'll tell me, "Mate, you're fucking delusional. There's no way they're putting it on Jinder." 2 weeks later at Backlash, Jinder goes over. And I remember texting both those guys, "Hate to say I told you so."
That loop was probably one of my favourite house shows as well. They did Belfast, I think, at the start of that loop, because Jinder won the title when I was in Canada, and the Belfast show was the weekend before that. I went over there for a couple of weeks, and I got to interview Alexa Bliss for one of the websites that I was working for at the time, and it was class, because I accidentally negged her during the interview. Because it was,
I thought you said that accidentally necked her there.
Oh no!
Jesus.
No, basically, I'd been prepping the interview and stuff, and it wasn't long after she'd been called up, I think, and we were talking about like the emotion of, you know, getting called up live on Raw to the main roster and stuff like that, and then I was saying to her about how she'd done really well for herself on the main roster despite not being one of the horsewomen. Kind of thing. I was like, and as soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, "Oh fuck, I've Jericho'd this." Because I put my foot in it when I interviewed him as well. I was like, "Oh shit!" But she was really, really nice. But she was absolutely lovely, really down to earth, flopping away. You know, loves that accent, and she's like, "I wasn't expecting to hear that." Well, she didn't say, "Wasn't he?" I wasn't expecting to hear a Scottish accent here in Belfast. And she was saying about how whenever they go on European tours, she loves to sample the different coffee they get like in different cities and stuff. And I was like, "Oh, where did you go in Belfast for your coffee?" She's like, "Oh, Starbucks. The Starbuckses are different everywhere you go." So I was like, "That's not really getting into your coffee there, Alexa." But no, it was the show that weekend as well. It was very good. There was a very famous, because the weekend before, there had been a big fight at the Botanic Gardens in Belfast, and there was a sign right down the front that the wrestlers kept getting drawn to, which said, "My dad's not here because he's fighting at Botanic." So that got a bit of thanks on the social media as well, so it was quite good wrapping that in.
I was going to say,
can anyone see that? I don't know if you can, but it's Triple H in the Shield gear. Right in the front row. I've got the fucking worst camera ever here, but just believe me. Believe me, that was that for.
I remember what you were saying earlier, like somebody telling Xavier, "Kick his fucking cunt in." Like, this is why we Glasgow will never get a WWE pay-per-view, because we just can't be trusted to keep it clean, can we? Like, I think we fucked it enough when we did the Bailey chant, didn't we?
Yeah, that was a good one as well, like.
That's something that's never been lived down as well. The Bailey thing, it's always been, like, ever since then, it's something that they kind of, they thrive on it. It's something that they always expect to happen. That's me and Miss Bliss there.
Oh, she was champion team as well.
Aye, I got to touch the belt.
Big time.
Big time. Anyway, house shows are class. But the big shows, not Paul White, but the big shows, the big events that have been happening this week are what we are going to fill the daft sheet with. And as always, we're going to look to fill the front sheet with the biggest news story of the week. And I don't think we're going to be competing much in this one because it's pretty damn clear that the rumours of Tyrus being backstage at the Payback on Saturday night after dropping the NWA Worlds title is obviously going to be the main draw. But I'll come to you first, Lewis. I mean, what do you think there's anything bigger than Tyrus for the past week?
I wouldn't say bigger. I'd say maybe similar level. CM Punk and all his shenanigans, like he always gets into, like a 12-year-old girl, or a.
We'll just clip that there and get you done for libel.
No, he'll be after me next. I don't know what his crack is. Obviously, Tony Khan's come out, sort of solved the issue, got rid of him, whether that solves the issue or not. But over the last week or so, there's just been more and more coming out about cameras around Wembley. Are we ever going to see what happened? Who sort of instigated it? Seemed like it was CM Punk. By starting saying, don't do this, don't do that. But then it was Jack Perry sort of being a bit egotistical. And then it's just sort of spiraled into one day he's coming to WWE. Well, one day he's in AEW, next day WWE bound. So it's, I would say CM Punk being a dafty is aptly the biggest story of the week for me.
That's the reason why we're recording kind of a night later this week as opposed to our usual Tuesday night recording, because I was convinced that there was going to be some more CM Punk drama to drop over the next couple of days. So again, you know, going back to what you were saying there, Lewis, in terms of like the timeline, obviously CM Punk has his altercation with Jack Perry just before the start of his match at All In the other week there. The two of them have a bit of a scrap afterwards, or whenever it was. Apparently Samoa Joe had to break it up. We wondered exactly what was going to be happening all week long. Then on Saturday, just before, about an hour or two before Collision was due to commence the cordon, there was a tweet with a statement from AEW saying that CM Punk, Phil Brooks and all his AEW affiliations had been terminated with cause, which set the Discord on fire on Saturday night, much to my wife's chagrin, as my phone kept going off with everybody chiming in on it.
That was Alexa Bliss.
No, it wasn't Alexa. No, I gave her the wrong number. But yeah, they had that, and then whether or not you think it exacerbated things or made things better is up for debate, but Tony then went out in front of the live crowd in Chicago to say what had happened, and then at the start of the Collision, he made the statement to camera about the reasons for the sacking and how he feared for his life at one point during what was going on. He said that he'd spoken with outside legal experts as well as his internal disciplinary team. And with that one fell swoop, probably, if we're honest, a year too late, CM Punk is now gone from AEW. Steve, like, what did you make of it all? What did you make of the whole announcement of it and the action to it over the last few days?
I think like everybody else, just... wow. I'm just shocked at the timing, given it was 24 hours before All Out and then merely, 2 hours before Collision was due to air. It was just mind-boggling. I want to put on my tinfoil hat for a minute and think, I reckon there might have been a mutiny, a locker room mutiny.
Aye?
Aye, I think... When they were going over or scheduled to go over what was running order for Collision, the whole locker room just said to Tony, "Enough's enough. Tony's got to go. It's him, because this can't go on." Whether or not he's totally to blame, or, you know, he's only part to blame. He is one of the guilty parties for what happened at All In. He heavily spoiled what should have been the company's crowning achievement, selling 80,000+ at a stadium, and put on this all-timer great show, and yet falling on from it. It's just talking about him and his backstage behaviour, and let's be frank, toxic attitude towards everybody. I think somebody, I don't know, maybe Jericho, Moxley, Danielson, whoever it was, went up, maybe collectively, all of them, maybe those three and the Elite, went up to Tony and says, enough's enough, Tony, he's got to go. And again, it's tinfoil hat stuff. I think if that was something that did happen, we probably would have heard of it, but I think something had to happen. Probably the more realistic thing is what you've just said. Tony Khan discussed it with legal and said, look, is this guy going to cause a lawsuit here? Because this is now two serious physical altercations where a working environment got seriously violent, and somebody very nearly got seriously hurt, or perhaps worse, I mean, myself included, if the story's true, that he lunged at him. So I think probably more likely a lawyer said to him, yeah, you're probably better getting rid of this guy, because yeah, it's going to cause a severe multi-million dollar lawsuit that you just don't want around. But, you know, to quote Taz, I digress.
That's the thing with it. I mean, we kind of get caught up as wrestling fans and people that are you know, heavily invested in the world of professional wrestling and all the stories and all the drama that comes with it. But at the end of the day, it's employees, it's a working environment, it's a business. And if anybody that I worked with or you worked with behaved in that kind of way, where they're being physically threatening to people, if they're very easy to rise to bait from other employees as well, then they need to go through that disciplinary route. And you know, you don't go for the boss. Like you just don't go for the boss. And again, until we see the CCTV footage from Wembley, which we probably will. I was listening to Stephanie Chase. She's just started a podcast talking about, you know, her experiences as a wrestling journalist and following AEW and whatnot. She made a good point that when Solange Knowles, Beyonce's sister, battered Jay-Z in a lift, the CCTV of that went everywhere immediately. And I expect, you know, once that video becomes or falls into the right or the wrong hands, then it's going to be the same as that. We're going to see exactly what happened. If he has lunged at Tony, or if it's, and again, not taking sides on it, maybe Tony doesn't strike you like a Vince McMahon type in terms of being able to handle physical shit. So it could just be, you know, maybe Punk stepped to him, put the shitters up on that kind of thing. If maybe the scuffle with Jack Perry has maybe just got a bit too close to them and he's swung or something like that. We don't know. We won't know until we see evidence of it.
I think on your point, like not being able to handle altercations like Vince and that, I think Tony Khan's been a bit sensitive potentially there, coming out saying he thought his life was in danger. And then I seen a video, like, he said that, and then directly after it cut to Vince getting elbow dropped with a trash can on him from Shawn Michaels and thrown off the St. Valentine's Massacre cell and getting buried alive nearly by Undertaker.
The thing is, there's a big difference between a planned wrestling spot and a physical altercation. Yeah. In Guerrilla, you probably are right. He has been dramatic. Say my life was endangered, but still, you don't want to worry. Let's not forget, Punk's gets MMA experience. He knows how to throw a punch, and Tony Khan only weighs what 90 pounds. he's at 90 pound if he's wet, kind of figure. Like,
if CM Punk were to throw a full hook at Tony Khan, you know, he could. We're talking a broken jaw at least. So,
and to be fair, you know, with the mood that Punk's been in, he probably would have tried to throw hook at Tony Khan or anybody else in the vicinity as well. But it's a really, really.
Hook was part of that match.
he'd have probably still been about as well. But it's just one of these things. Like we've said on podcasts over the last wee while, you know, the majority of us are Punk fans. We enjoyed his rise through the WWE ranks because that's where most of us would have seen him in the mainstream. We get so excited about seeing him coming back to wrestling with the first dance and everything like that. He's that 2001 run that he had into 2002 was marvellous. There were so many great moments, great matches, great storylines that he had. Then last year with the fallout from All Out, you were still anticipating him coming back at some point because his box office, you know, you wanted to see what was going to happen. You wanted to see if he was going to come into contact with the Bucks, if he was going to come into contact with Kenny Omega, if we were going to get that kind of payoff to things. And all of that last year overshadowed MJF. And then fast forward a year, and he's done it again, maybe inadvertently, but like him getting sacked now has completely fucked the unification match that we were hoping we were going to get between them.
Yep.
It almost derailed this whole Ricky Starks arc that we've praised over the last wee while as well. And you could tell from his promo in Collision the other night that he was super pissed off that his potential headlining of All Out had just been flushed in the pan because of, you know, Punk's actions the week before. Right. And luckily enough, and I think we're probably going to get onto it later on, luckily enough, the make-do that he had, you know, probably elevated him higher than the match with Punk might have done. But it's just that it's the butterfly effect of it, everything that's impacting on it. But I mean, what do you think AEW is going to be in a better position now that he is away in terms of mainstream success, media eyes on the product, or do you think that they're going to have to kind of reset things?
I think the short term there will be a hit. Braun Strowman just shared something just before we came on the Discord. Apparently, they took a 200,000 viewership hit on Collision as soon as Tony came up on screen, announced that he'd been released from his contract. Instantly, there was like they lost a fifth of their viewership. Now, nothing bores me in wrestling about talker ratings. I can't be honest with it because I think modern day ratings don't matter anymore. Streaming numbers are where they're at, but you know, Bronze is a reliable source, and he got that from I think it was Fightful Select. So they are probably. They're probably going to take.
I've seen that as well. Just before I came on here.
In terms of, but long term, I'm sure they'll be fine. MJF, he's the future. He's hotter than ever. The Adam Cole storyline is still red hot. And as we're going to discuss later, he's got a feud that looks like it's in the oven now with Samoa Joe. That's box office shit right there. I can't wait for that. And like AEW was already on the up before Punk came on board, and I actually think, do you know what? Now that the elephant out of the room's gone, the locker room's going to feel a hell of a lot more relaxed now. I think they'll only get better. I think shows are only going to get better. I think there's going to be less tension, and there's going to be more harmony. I liken it to maybe when I'm trying to think of what a good football comparison, probably after Roy Keane left Man United. He infamously was an absolute volatile, for better or worse, figure in the dressing room. And Alex Ferguson just decided one day, enough's enough, get to fuck. And Man United, I think, later that season, won the Champions League. So I think they'll be fine long term.
to a lesser extent, the footballing analogy that I saw of it was CM Punk was the equivalent of Joey Barton signing for Rangers. A guy that thought he could go into a newly established, shall we say, side and bring his experience and wealth of higher level football to a new team and start a new history for that club. And you know, Joey Barton failed at that miserably.
Aye, when he likened the signing to Neymar signing for PSG.
It'll be in the language part, you know, Barton being French. Maybe when I got over, yeah.
So, yeah, the only other thing I was wanting to say about the CM Punk stuff and them getting fired is, do you think that now that he's away, the elite also need to stop taking jibes at him, taking barbs, and just put that in the back burner as well? Because, I mean, I know that on... They're still having chops at him on being the elite. I think there was a thing about Kenny Omega drinking Pepsi and you know, saying it tasted like lighter fuel, and also the Bucks taking a victory lap at the end of Collision as well. And again, I don't know if that's maybe just because they were in Chicago and you know building like getting the heat for that. But do you think that for it to be as harmonious a breakup between CM Punk and AEW as possible, Tony also needs to say to them, fucking reel it in, get over it, move on, he's away, he's don't need to be doing this anymore.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably one of the only differences between AEW being as maybe secure as WWE is, can you still hear me? I've got a wee pop up there.
Aye.
With shit like that happening, it just seems a bit immature. I reckon arses would be booted if, say, someone like WWE, who's on top? Say if someone like Roman Reigns got released after he had a fight with Seth Rollins or something, and Seth Rollins came out and started doing the point to the ones or anything like that. There's a difference between when someone's you're in a feud with someone when Seth Rollins comes out in the polka dots and he comes out with the Shield music against Roman Reigns, or he wears the Finn Balor gear from wherever. When they're actively in the company, you can have those sort of jabs and all that sort of stuff to get heat. But when it's more of a legal situation and a more volatile one like that, I think they just need to get a grip and sort of reel in the immaturity and the... Aye. Focus more on the future rather than dwelling on the past.
Aye, I agree. I think one of the things I hated about WWE post Monday Night War era was all the kicking and pissing in the grave of WCW. There was no need for it. It was so pathetic. It was so petty. Vince, whenever he could get a chance, particularly when like Eric Bischoff was the Raw GM, like pretty much every week. Mm-hmm. Vince reminded him, there's a reason why you're the general manager Monday Night Raw and I'm not the general manager on Monday Night Raw. And I hated that shit. It was just so petty. Like, Vince, you won. You don't need to piss in the guy's grave. No one respects a sore winner. They're just as bad as sore losers in a way. So I hope, and I think it's something WWE in recent years, to be fair, have got out of their system. They're a bit more grown up now. They don't kind of take those kind of jibes and risks, and it's something that AEW needs to stop as a whole. Like, sometimes it's all right to make wee jokes about it, but see when it turns into something petty and volatile and nasty, it gets a bit uncomfortable after a while.
So I really do hope that
they... I hope it's something somebody has the wisdom to say, look, he's gone, we don't need to deal with him anymore. Let's just not talk about him on camera anymore, right? Let's just get on with putting out the best product we can and get on with our lives, basically.
Yep. Well, I mean, the last one that you're going to have
on yours, mate. Oh. Sorry, Chris. Just piggybacking on yours was just about, I think the last time I heard WWE throw a wee sort of jab at anyone like that was maybe when Sting came out. It was at WrestleMania 31, and they said, this is what it feels like, Sting. This is what 80,000 feels like. So I'm glad he got his own back on that by coming out of Wembley in front of a couple thousand more.
Cool. Well, what we'll do is we will put a fine point on the CM Punk debacle with the headline, which I've got here as Tony Khan has finally had his fill of CM Punk. So we'll put that down there. Now, what we'll do is we'll go on to the back page. Now, there's been plenty of options this week for the match of the week to go on the back page of the Daft Sheet. I'll come to you first, Lewis. What would you say has been your pick of the in-ring for this week?
Yeah, I'd say this week's probably, as far as I can even remember, the most 4-star-plus matches, even 4.5-star-plus matches that I've ever seen in, never mind 2 weeks, like a whole month or even 6 months of wrestling across WWE, AEW, whatever else might be. I'm sure they've been putting on matches like that. However, I'll leave the AEW side to Steve. I'll go for probably what I think one of the best matches of Payback was, and that was the tag team title match, I'd say. Even though it was maybe not the classic, like Gunther versus Gable, or maybe even Trish and Becky, but I thought it was probably the most fun, most Attitude Era like match they've had in a little while as well. It started off pretty hot, slowed down a little bit, like sort of Judgment Day style matches do. And then just the moments that were in it, such as them going away and coming back in the hockey gear, them Rhea Ripley spearing Kevin Owens through the barricade, Kevin Owens doing the swanton off the sort of rafters, and then even the sort of Attitude Era style finish of nearly winning, refs can't do anything because it's a DQ. Dom comes in, numbers game, 1-2-3. I just thought it was a really fun match overall, and it's not quite the classics that maybe Takeshita and Kenny Omega had, or Danielson versus Ricky Starks, but yeah, it's probably the match I had some of the most fun watching over the weekend.
Do you think that it's been a bit of a wasted opportunity with Owens and Zayn being champions? Because, you know, they had all the hype going into WrestleMania, obviously against the Usos, winning the belts there, finishing that story, to coin a phrase from them. But in terms of their actual run as champions, do you think that it stands up?
I think when they first became champions, they probably had a better outcome for themselves. I certainly feel like I had a bit of more sort of belief that they could do something with the tag team titles. I don't feel like they've been massively elevated from where they've been. However, they've put on a couple of good matches here and there. They didn't get on the SummerSlam card, which is weird. I don't know if there was an injury or anything that you can sort of fill me in on there, but
I get the. Nah. I've always got the impression, I don't follow WWE as much now, but I've always got the impression that Owens and Zayn were victims of the Bloodline storyline.
Why? Then what way? What do you mean by that?
They took the belt from the Usos, and yet it seemed like that was only used as a sort of like a storyline piece for that. Like it wasn't about
the Bloodline,
exactly. Like it should have been it was a great match they had, and it was a great title, and it was one of the kind of feel good stories of WrestleMania, two lifelong pals becoming tag team champions together at WrestleMania. But then afterwards, it felt it was all just about the Usos losing it, because then the main thing was Roman being angry at them for losing it. And then him and Solo try to win it back against them at Saudi Arabia. So it felt like it was only used as the next chapter in the Bloodline storyline. It wasn't about them winning the belts.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good point. I think if they had their own sort of, their own build and their own storyline that wasn't sort of a sub a subsection of the Bloodline story they would have been able to put on.
Exactly, I was hoping for them I was hoping to keep for them to keep it long term and have feuds against the likes of the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders. Bring those DIY. Guys back to prominence, but DIY, like, because there's been long-term rumors that they're going to reunite, but none of that happened. Maybe that'll happen with the Judgment Day, but then again, they've got their own storyline now, because Priest has still got is he calling it the Senor Money in the Bank briefcase now? Aye, that's quite funny. So, again, I hope that Finn and Damien get a good run out of this, but I can't help but think that WWE are only using the tag titles again as a side piece for that storyline.
Yeah, I think it was just with last thing on the titles and that. I think with I don't know whether there was a plan in place or not, but I think obviously Jey Uso coming to Raw, Sami Zayn was the first out to greet him, and he's sort of trying to be what I got from Raw. I don't know if you've seen it, was he was trying to be the mediator between the whole of the roster that the Bloodline and Jey has sort of wronged to Jey, trying to keep them either civil or trying to become friends and that. So I don't know if whether they just wanted, again, that part of the Bloodline story, they needed Sammy without the belts or away from that tag team. And that's maybe why the Judgment Day have got them, or maybe they've got another sort of plan for them. But yeah, they are being used as a bit too much of a prop rather than a championship belt at the moment.
The trade for the Jey turning up in Raw, I think, is probably going to be the dagger back into the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens storyline. It's going to be the bit that pries them apart again, I think. Because, you know, now that Sami's got his us back, you know, they're on the same show, they're away from the Bloodline being on though as well. It's going to rekindle that friendship, and with the anger management kind of storyline that they've got going with KO just now, it's probably going to lead into that. And I think with the Judgment Day having the belts now as well, it's very intriguing, because you've got the anxiousness over what Priest's going to do with the Money in the Bank. Is Finn going to try and screw him out of that somehow? Because obviously he wants to ascend to the top. But the other thing that's came out of it as well, kind of under the radar, Finn Balor is now a Grand Slam champion in WWE, now that he's a tag champ as well. And it's mad to think that a guy that he's... Obviously, it was the first Universal champion for, 24 hours or whatever it was. And there was always that thing about, you know, because he was injured so quickly and that Vince didn't have the trust in him. But he's become this solid hand in WWE that, you know, it almost looked for a while that he was going to be going down the Dolph Ziggler route of being the person that folk debut against and get the win over. But this whole Judgment Day thing over the last year that has brought him back to prominence. And, you know, I'd have been all behind him beating Rollins for the World Championship.
Oh, no, definitely.
I was kind of disappointed he didn't.
I was out on the QB as well, so I'm glad.
Now that he's got the tag belts as well, it's great to see that he's been acknowledged for it, to use a Roman Reignsism. But in terms of that, I mean, you mentioned earlier on you've got teams like the Viking Raiders and potentially DIY coming back. Maybe that's part of the thinking as well. You know, you've got a lot of potential face tag teams in the division that you wouldn't necessarily pit against Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. So having the tag titles on a heel team maybe opens up those opportunities for the likes of Ciampa and Gargano to come back into it. The Viking Raiders, I've never ever bought them as heels. I don't see it.
They're too cool.
Aye. Their moveset is too face-ish.
Aye.
To take them seriously as that. And then obviously you've got Alpha Academy in there. Great face tag team as well. Although Gable going it alone against Gunther recently has been brilliant as well. So there's a lot of...
Did I not hear rumours there's an Otis heel turn coming with that?
No, they can't do that. I mean, that was the whole fucking thing with Tucker Knight. You know, they couldn't wait to turn him heel as well. They can't be doing that. But in terms of that being a contender for match of the week, I've not yet got down to watching it back, but I've seen a few of the spots where was it Finn was inside the bin, and Kayle and Sammy were like wailing on him. I love that spot. Anything where someone's inside the bin. I think it was at Io Shirai in the Women's War Games match.
Oh, yeah.
I was showing some of that to one of my nieces last night, and she was like, how does that not hurt? I was like, it does hurt. It really does hurt.
I've not watched Payback, but I heard a lot of good things. I know people have talked heavily about Becky versus Trish and the Steel Cage.
It was an excellent match.
I'd say it's both their best matches ever. Right. I think it was probably both their best matches ever.
Really? Because I read a tweet. If you watched that match, you would never believe Trish was a 48-year-old woman with two kids.
I know. I just point blank refuse to believe that. Like, regardless of whether she was in a cage or not, she's still 1999 Trish status in my mind.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
I know I heard Rollins and Nakamura was a banger, although I'd expect that to be.
Yeah. Now the only one I've seen from Payback was the Trish match, but I'm gonna have faith in you, Lewis, that the tag team match is a great contender for the back page. Now, Steve,
just
what would you
Meltzer's
put up against
if you want
it?
To go by his reins.
All out was weird because there was bugger all build. It was only a week after All In, and then of course 24 hours earlier was the Punk fallout and the announcement that he'd been released. So it was almost like you forgot there was even a pay-per-view coming. And you looked at the card, you're going, that is easily AEW's most underwhelming card to date, because there was no world title match. I think it's the first pay-per-view that they've not had a world title match, because MJF and Cole were defending the ROH belts, which strangely was against Silver and Reynolds. And there was no women's title match either. They had the TBS championship instead. And there was no Jericho match. So Jericho wasn't on the pay-per-view.
It's the first AEW pay-per-view that Jericho's not been on at all.
Aye. So yeah, it was weird. Like, I heard a lot of people saying, this is shit. This is just like a dynamite, more or less. But they knocked it out of the park. Match quality wise, it might be the best pay per view this year, AEW or WWE. I think it's an exaggeration to say there was 3 5 stars matches on there, and then there's at least another 2 which are in the 4-star realm as well. Hobbs versus Miro, that was brilliant, and hats off to the Chicago crowd for upping that with the meat chants. I thought that was hilarious. And there was the other thing, we were all afraid that it was going to be the most toxic crowd ever because it was Chicago and they were going to be raging that Punk was gone. But no, they had a lot of fun with it. And I think it's even a sign that even Chicago's decided, you know what, fuck them, we've had enough of them as well. But we've talked enough about Punk. There was also Takeshita versus Omega. Oh my God, that was brilliant. And the shock as well of Takeshita winning clean, and that's now I think it's 5 pay-per-views in a row Omega's taking a loss as well.
I was going to say Blood and Guts, but that wasn't a pay-per-view, that was a dynamite.
Aye, and the main event was Moxley versus Orange Cassidy, and that was brilliant as well. That was just a bloodbath. I mean I mean, usually it's Moxley bleeding like fuck.
For a Moxley match, that's a bloodbath, and he doesn't bleed in it.
Exactly, it was OC for a change, and he took some brutal bumps in that one. I think it might be OC's kind of
best match
cement as a main event. I think people are going as far to say now he's the one that's going to dethrone MJF. I think you can't deny he's now a main eventer. But the match of the night. quite simply, Starks versus Danielson, because that strap match, Jesus fucking Christ. It wasn't even a wrestling match at times. It was just a fucking brawl, the kind of brawl you see in Govan after an old fun game. It's fucking mental. It was, because it was all shoot as well. They didn't need to say that because they were legit beating the fuck out of each other. And it started off immediately because before the bell had even rung, Starks bum rushed Danielson, put him out the ring, and then he got his own weight belt and fucking cracked him with the buckle, and Danielson bladed, and immediately he was bleeding like fuck. And then the strap shots that Danielson was giving Starks in the corner. The face off, and they were just kind of whipping each other's faces, was just mental. And there was a great imagery that came out of it. At one point, Danielson's on his knees, and he's giving the Hogan stare when Hogan does the Hulk up, and he's just fucking crimson. It was just a great imagery from it all.
To steal something that they said on the What Culture review of it, the first kind of portion of the match was Ricky Starks leveling up to Danielson, you know, with the brutality and the whipping with the strap and everything like that. But that bit that you're just talking about there with the crimson mask and Danielson being like, all right, that was him going up another level again.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was them, but that was the physical, that was the look that says, like, Starks, I like what you're doing.
Aye.
Now you're getting your arse kicked.
Aye, I think it was reminiscent of these, like, old Japan matches from the 90s. If you watch a lot of them, like the Kawada Misawa matches, that's how a lot of them went. When one had the other on their knees, caused it chopping and slapping him, and the other was just looking at him going, no, still nothing. And then the other one would come back and he would do the same to the other one. It was reminiscent of those matches.
I was there. Did you get to see that one, Lewis?
Yeah, I seen that match. It was wild. Like, I was, the only reason I didn't choose that was because I don't think I would have got there first in the choices. And I presume that was being lined up anyway, just because it was the match of the night. I think a good way to sort of put that as well was Ricky Starks went straight up to fifth gear, but Danielson had the sixth gear in his car. That's what he was like. He was the one with the sixth gear in his car. He was the one with the 20 years on Starks that he just had, right, okay, you've reached this level, now try and get to this.
Aye.
He just went, well, you've got to your 100%, watch what I can do at my 100%. So it was wild.
It was like the Undertaker Jeff Hardy spot from 2002. Yeah. When they had that brilliant ladder match, like Undertaker at the end said, "You're good kid, you're just not there yet." Can I moment? Yeah.
I think as well, just the brutality of it. When you keep in mind that Danielson's probably still not 100% fit, his arms clearly still gubbed. He even alluded to that in the press conference afterwards.
It was a legit rod he had as well.
Aye,
which I couldn't believe.
They had a lot of smoke and mirrors in the match. And you almost kind of forgot as well. I know that it was on commentary, but you almost kind of forgot that the whole Steamboat angle had been played a part in it, because that was so heavily in the CM Punk stuff that you kind of forgot that was the case. That it felt like, it didn't feel like a match that had been made the night before. It felt, you know, that there was surely some kind of build to it with the amount of brutality that went on in it. And then
it makes you think, like, imagine if the AEW did a job and actually had a good proper long booking plan for
my thoughts on that as well. My thoughts on that as well would have been like, so correct me if I'm wrong, was CM Punk supposed to be, was he penciled in against Starks on All Out?
Yes, it was supposed to be the headlining match.
If the thing is, if that was the case, and Brian Danielson was clearly cleared to compete, was he just planned to not be on either of the shows? Because it was a massive uproar that he wasn't going to be on All In. So was there a plan on him not being on All Out either, even though he was clear? That's something.
I haven't I haven't heard anything to the degree. I think it was very much a case of Tony calling Brian and say, look, can you come back a bit early?
100%.
I was listening to WrestleTalk's review of it, and I think it was Ollie Davis. He picked up that not once did Brian throw a punch with his right arm.
And that kind of...
So he's still probably legit injured.
That is probably one of the reasons as well why there was no wrestling in the match. We're so used to seeing a Bryan Danielson match where he's putting in label locks, you know, he's doing all the chain wrestling, using he's doing all that sort of stuff. And the strap match was the perfect crutch where that wasn't needed. And again, it's obviously been Bryan that's agented it as well, because having the hot start to it with Starks hitting on before the bell rings, it takes out the necessity to start with a lockup or chain or anything like that at all. So it was very well done. And that kind of leads me on to what my next question was going to be, is there's been rumours that over the last few weeks, the creative direction of Collision has been more influenced by Brian, and Tony Khan said in one of the interviews last week as well that if he was to die, he's already told his dad to give the pencil to Daniel Bryan. Do you think now Collision should be the Danielson show?
I think they've got to give him it. I think he's a much more professional leader than what Punk is. He's universally loved. He's someone that the young guys will all look up to and instantly have respect for and trust that he has their best thoughts in mind as well. And I think because he's got that old school style and new school thinking, I think that would make him a great creative force in there as well.
Good stuff. The only thing with that maybe is that having him the head of the sort of the face of Collision in terms of the differences between him and Punk is, I feel like Punk's got a bit more about him all round sort of promo and maybe other things about him, whereas obviously Danielson is, I'm not undercutting his storytelling or anything like that. I don't know whether CM Punk's just got more of a sort of a promoter sort of personality.
I get you mean Punk's got more of ability to cross into the general public. Because yeah. I think he's got that kind of brief UFC exposure. He's been in movies, whereas Danielson is just a wrestler. He's just known to be a wrestler. I think basically
it was in Total Divas as well, mind.
I suppose like my fiance knows him as, oh, that's Brie Bella's husband. So like he does have some kind of he's like, well, that's that vegan guy. So I guess there's that, but Danielson is just purely a wrestler.
Aye.
You know, his Punk had a bit more crossover appeal. So you're right in that regard, Lewis. There might be a drop down in star power, but
maybe they're just going down the route of a wrestling show rather than a
I think in the immediate future, give Danielson Collision for a year until they can maybe make it. I don't know if Jack Perry can pull his head out his arse, make him the sort of future Starks, I guess. Starks has got that ability to have that crossover appeal.
Again, the Collision roster will probably open up a good bit now as well. I'd imagine that nobody's going to be getting banned for the building if they turn up and stuff like that. So it could be a good place for the younger ones to thrive. Not necessarily, you know, the ones that are on Dark and stuff like that, but you know, it'll give things a bit better, a bit more space to breathe, because the Collision is a very different wrestling show to what Dynamite is, and I really hope it doesn't lose that feel. With Punk being away. But we shall move on. As much as I do enjoy a hardcore match, and I'm happy for Finn Balor becoming the Grand Slam champion, I think it has to be Starks and Danielson for the win for the back page. And the headline for that one is "Strap yourself in for an absolute leathering." That's what we're going to learn with on that. Now, there's no centrefold.
That could fall so many different ways.
It could. It could. we don't have a centrefold this week, so we're just going to crack on straight into the page three section on here for this week's Daft Sheet, which is the most titillating bit of gossip that we've heard. So, Steve, we'll come to you first. What would your choice for page three be this week? And I'm not going to make any remarks about tits this week. I've already outed myself as being a lover of the Trish Stratus and Alexa Bliss.
We've
already risked the cancellation button enough.
Yep.
I don't know if there's any really hot gossip, but it's AEW have now officially confirmed October 1st. They've got another pay-per-view coming called Wrestle Dream, and it's in homage to Antonio, the first anniversary of the passing of Antonio Inoki. It's another New Japan crossover event. It's not going to be to the same degree as Forbidden Door, apparently, though, because apparently New Japan has its own show in Osaka, I think it is, the night before. Kobe. I think it's the Destruction Tour that they do the kind of mid-autumn time. Mm-hmm. But there is going to be some fairly big New Japan names coming over. I think that's why Shibata was involved at All Out, because he's involved in the setup of that. But apparently it's also a sign that Strap Yourself In, AEW is going to be start doing monthly pay-per-views, like a time and a schedule hasn't been released yet, but I think Khan has pretty much all but said we're going to be doing monthly pay-per-views from now on. I've got mixed feelings about it. Simply because my pocket cannot take any more wrestling. I've got a wedding to pay for, I've got a house to buy. Sorry, Tony, I can't afford this anymore. And I'm not gonna, on top of all, I barely get time these days to watch the fucking hours upon hours of wrestling that's on seemingly every week now.
It's again, AEW Network or something.
I think that's their ultimate cause, isn't it? They need to make their own streaming site soon enough. Mm-hmm.
That might be the way that they get there. No, because I know that it's Warner that's kind of pushing them for it. So that might be the case. They might do more bigger shows, pay per views, but if there's a network attachment to it, so say if they launch the AEW Network on Warner Discovery or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, Warner will get the money from those mm-hmm. big monthly ones, but they keep the big four as proper $50 shows.
Yeah.
That could be their way around it.
Could be. I think the other positives that could come from it is that we get more mid-carders, a bit more pay-per-view and storyline time. I think that was another positive that came out of All Out, that some of the mid-carder guys, like say your Hobbs, your Miros, your Cassidy's, your Starlanders, they got a bit more pay-per-view time for a change instead of the usual guys like Omega and Jericho that usually hog the pay-per-view spots. So I would like to think we get to see more guys like, I'm thinking Bandido. I'm like a broken record with him. Like, remember he had that superb debut match with Jericho just under a year ago for the ROH title. AEW signed him, and I think I've seen him twice since. Like, I hope we see guys like that again, and guys like House of Black, you know, we can't get enough of them. And I hope as well we maybe get situations where maybe the tag belt or the tag title match gets the main event, or the TNT title gets the main event spot. I think Christian and Luchasaurus, they're doing a great job right now in their storyline, Christian especially, so I think they should be rewarded with like a main event spot on a pay-per-view, so that would be good to see.
One more thing, like a positive on that as well, monthly shows, is I think it takes a little bit more pressure off of the expectations maybe. You've not got to wait quite as long for that, that maybe whenever it is 2-3-4 months it can be without a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
AEW, there's not that True. As much sort of maybe it lowers the hype a little bit, but it does lower the expectations. So like All Out, because you just had All In, you were thinking All Out's not going to be as good, and then the bar was slightly low, especially the CM Punk stuff, that it can just blow out the water monthly rather than with that pressure every few months.
Another way they could use it is that you look at like the recent pay-per-views, like your Double or Nothings and All Outs, like they were fucking crammed with 11 matches. And
yeah. You can space it out more.
They can look at it and we've got two or three matches more than what we need here. Let's take those three out. Let's put them on the next pay-per-view. You know, let's have a bit of breathing space here. I know you said earlier, Chris, the Becky-Trish match wasn't on SummerSlam, and I heard there was a big uproar about that. Well, maybe it was for the better, because the this match of Payback that they had sounds like an absolute cracker. So maybe that's a good thing, because they got their moment at another pay per view. So maybe this is something AEW should look more to do.
That is a cracking bit of gossip that I think is possibly worth the front page. The fact that they'd be going to the monthly PPVs. But Lewis, can you trump that?
I'll move us on away from AEW a bit. I'll talk about I don't know whether it's a bit more kayfabe gossip, but what Adam Pearce announced was that there's going to be a trade to SmackDown for Jey Uso, so SmackDown are going to get someone. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are. Do you think that's potentially just Cody's way of getting over to SmackDown to sort of make this next 6 month build towards Roman, or do you think there would be someone better who could maybe get a bit more spotlight on SmackDown, or who you would maybe suggest that could potentially go over there instead of Cody? Or do you think it's sort of fully loaded there for Cody to go over and start his build towards Roman?
I think it was Cody that announced it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Adam Pearce said it backstage, but Cody was sort of alluding to it as well, yeah.
He brokered it kind of thing. So storyline-wise, it makes sense. Like he said, do a direct swap, me for Jay, so I can go over to SmackDown. So that would make sense. But it would be cool if they could sell it another way, where somebody else gets a spot. Drew would be ideal, because Drew needs definitely to do something. Because I've caught snippets of him and Riddle, and it ain't working.
No,
sorry, but
isn't.
They're both trying their best, but it just ain't working. And I'm so fearful that Drew's going down. Sorry, Dolph, but the Dolph Ziggler route.
Aye, yeah. I mean, I think there's going to be a big thing looming over a lot of the guys in WWE over the next couple of weeks as well. Because I think the Endeavor deal is set to go through. In the next week or so, and there's been rumours for quite a while that there's a big lot of cuts coming as well. So if none of them are shown up and shown out, like you're saying with McIntyre and Riddle just now, you would hope that McIntyre wouldn't be one of the ones that would maybe go by the wayside that way, but certainly, if moving show could freshen up his character, freshen up his storylines, that kind of thing, might be a bit of a saving grace for them.
Definitely.
I immediately turn him heel, have him feud with Ray with the US belt, something like that.
I looked at him as well. I just seen him on Raw. I was watching him sort of. I just got that in my mind about how he almost didn't re-sign, or he was going to quit because he'd done a high profile storyline, or he wasn't being used enough, or this just prancing around the ring with Riddle. Against the New Day and the Viking Raiders and that, and it's just he's been plopped back straight in the same position that he was, and I just don't see it going in the right direction for him unless the heel turn comes pretty quickly, because I think we're all expecting it.
Yep. Nice. And again,
should have happened after WrestleMania.
And if you're looking at positioning him as a big heel, kind of turning. Mm-hmm. Like bringing this section round, put him against Cody.
Yeah,
you know, I think we spoke about it the other week there.
Aye, I suggested that a couple of weeks ago with you. Like, there's a sort of wee storyline lingering there about how Drew was the one that carried the company through COVID, and then this prick from another company shows up and steals the limelight from me, and I'm pretty much kicked in the card as if none of it ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, they could sell that, but
there's loads they could do, and I think opening that kind of door, that kind of worms, that, you know, if Cody's able to broker a trade, why can't other people do it? I know that, like, was it Michael Cole, one of the commentators, that said, well, he's used to being an EVP in a company, so he knows how to get shit done. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. So maybe that's the clout that Cody has. And again, that's something that they could maybe tie in as well. You know, that could be part of their storyline as well. How's Cody getting to make these decisions?
Yeah.
But nobody else is, kind of thing. So it's an intriguing one. And I think it is going to be, again, with the Endeavour stuff coming on, and how they perceive what WWE is now to what they want it to be in conjunction with UFC and all that kind of thing. It's going to be an interesting time there as well. Are we going to see a more AEW style, dare I say it, from WWE to mirror the UFC kind of brutality? Because, I mean, that's what I kind of look at WWE as being the family show and AEW as being the more adult kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is the UFC merger gonna make any difference to that at all?
It's possible, but, like, I remember talking to a guy all in about this, and I don't think it's likely because WWE seems to have this successful business model of being the gateway promotion, whereas they'll get you when you're a kid, but then AEW will then catch on to you when you turn about 15 or 16 because they've got the more mature and heavy-hitting kind of product.
Cool. I'm totally in agreement with that. I think the WWE family-friendly stuff, I say it's not as violent. We've just had Lewis talking about, you know, guys getting put in bins and hit with kendo sticks. You've got to the McIntyre almost decapitating Xavier Woods with a chair.
You've got a dominatrix as the goddamn women's world champion.
But it's all, it's all, like, they've kind of been the opposite of the attitude era with it, where they went to the furthest extremes they could, you know, with the kind of the shocking, the Jerry Springer, Howard Stern type stuff, whereas you're just getting a kind of a wee taster for it now. Yeah. Just a wee taster of the dominatrix, the other play, just a wee taster of all that kind of stuff going on. But in terms of bringing back around to Cody, being able to pick and choose who he's on the shows with, it's probably quite a good development for his character as well. You know, it can rile people up. It can make them be a baby face, but giving the heels something proper to have an issue with them about as well. And that's why I'm going to make that the page 3 for this week. I'm going to give that one to you, Lewis. And the headline for that is Cody making inroads. Looks better written down for Roman, because obviously it is. He needs to finish this story, this never-ending story.
Oh, you've missed one there. You've missed one. All roads lead to Rome, man.
That's a good one as well. That could be the sub. That could be the sub headline.
Aye.
It will always look better back down. those kind of ones there. The last bit of the paper that we need to fill this evening, the last bit of the daft sheet, is the TV pages, where I'm going to ask you guys to give your recommendations for something that's wrestling related but not necessarily wrestling. So I'll come to you on this one first, Lewis. What would you say would be your pick of the TV pages?
It's going to be friend of the show, sort of cultaholic Tom Campbell. He came on the TikTok, and the last video that Cult Hulk put out was him going round to a WWE fan. It was a little boy, and it was a sort of, he won a competition his mum applied for, and
They got him loads of toys. It was really heartwarming. And they came into his house. So you've seen loads of things before, like Make-A-Wishes and WWE and all that. It was the same sort of vibe to this. And they took him to a show in, I think it was the last one in Newcastle, the WWE Live. And they even got a video from Cody saying, I think his name is Heath or something. It was, hey Heath, heard you're a massive fan. I'd like to invite you as my guest to WWE Live in Newcastle and everything. And it was just one of those heartwarming videos that it's only a couple of minutes long. So, I'd say that's the best wrestling but not wrestling thing I've seen so far this week. And I'd say check it out.
Anything Tom Campbell related right now is absolute gold. Yeah. We talked him up last week about, you know, the impact that he had on getting Grado booked for All In and everything like that. But he's just like he's such a positive light in what can be quite a dark wrestling world, especially wrestling media. And again, the chat I had with him back, what, maybe 10 weeks ago. For one of the first episodes of the Daft Sheet, I could have talked to him for ages, and just because it just radiates that, and the fact that he's been able to use Cultaholic to bring happiness to that kid in the video as well. Great, he's a great guy, and again, he's one of these ones that I love talking about. I just hope nothing shady comes out about him. we need to make everything redacted. It's so commonplace in wrestling just now, you know. I'd mentioned in the Discord chat earlier on as well, unfortunately, another wrestler passed away this week, Dean Alexander, who was the last opponent of Lionheart before he passed away. And I knew Dean, not mega well, but when I was doing seminars and stuff with PWU over here, he was always up for them. Commentated on a couple of shows, I think, that he was on, and he was always a nice enough guy to me. But unfortunately, during Me Too, he got outed for quite a couple of things, and that kind of he moved away from Ireland as a result of that. And I know that he was working over in some of like Marty Jones shows in the Northwest England and things like that. Unfortunately, the news broke the other day that he passed away. And although he was kind of blackballed for stuff that he was getting up to and stuff, you maybe don't want them near wrestling schools and things like that. But you don't want them dead. You know, it's sad enough on that. But the fact that there is so much positivity from guys like Tom Campbell and various other wrestling outlets that are there, it's good to see that people can latch onto that.
I remember when the speaking out stuff happened, Chris. It was actually through a report that Tom Campbell was reading out that I got all the news from. He did like a big 10-minute piece on YouTube on the Call of Hot channel, and you can see it in his face. It's just demoralised reading all this out about all these guys that we all loved and looked up to, and you find out they were like people that he knew and interviewed, and we're finding out all these unspeakably horrible things that these guys were doing. But he took a minute at the end to say, and let's not forget, that was all the height of COVID. We were depressed enough because we were all locked in our houses at the time, and but he took a minute at the end and saying, guys, I know this is a really dark period in our lives, but please, please, please don't turn your back on wrestling because of this. Do not let a few scumbags ruin it for us all. You know, let's try our best to stick together because we will be together again at wrestling shows, enjoying it again. So please keep the faith and remember, wrestling is still a place for good, and you know, credit to him for that, because a lot of people would have thrown in the towel and say, "Fuck this shit," you know. I'm not watching wrestling again if this is the kind of dark shit that's involved in it.
It's good that we've kind of we've got through the speaking out movement. And again, I know that like even 1PW have been in the news this week for no paying people and stuff like that. So and so there seems to be a bit of shadiness keeping back.
I read that and I thought, Jesus Christ, is it 2005 again?
It's mad. But hopefully there's enough positive stories coming out of wrestling and enough positive work being done by promotions to make sure there's no.
Just quickly, I just get to Lewis. I saw the shortened version on Cultaholics' Instagram page about that, and it was a really beautiful video. And well done, Tom, for putting it together. Well done, Cody, as well, because Cody's kind of taking up the mantle from Cena as the kind of make a wish guy.
Mm.
And he really knows how to come across that really well and sell it well. We saw bits of him do that in AEW and all that. I mean, he cured racism. Now he's going to cure child cancer as well.
Cool. Right, we'll go for there, Lonnie, your pick for the best wrestling-related thing to watch this week, Steve.
Well, it's more a preview thing. It's something that starts next week on Netflix. I'm very, very excited about. And it's something called Wrestlers. It's a documentary series about OVW. That used to be the developmental territory for WWE prior to FCW, which later evolved into NXT. It used to be managed back in the day by Cornette, believe it or not. These days, it's now managed and part-owned by Al Snow. And it's just, if you watch the trailer for it, it's just about these guys trying to make it in the world of wrestling. I think it kind of stems around three wrestlers and also the management of it. And it's kind of hinted that it is still one of the hotbeds if you want to get spotted in wrestling and get signed to either WWE or AEW. But because it's a small-time wrestling promotion, it's got a mountain of financial problems. And in it, they say Al Snow is a great creative mind, but unfortunately he's not a very good businessman. And I think the way they're selling it is that Al's almost kind of the heel in other ways, because he's kind of on camera saying, I've been in the wrestling business for 40 years, I've worked for every major wrestling company, I'll be goddamned if I'm going to have some local jobbers basically tell me how to book a wrestling show and all this. And then he's got these advisors telling him, Al, we're already like 200,000-300,000 in the hole. We can't sell this anymore. We've got to start doing tours. We've got to start, thinking of different ways to make money. But ultimately, I'm just really excited for it because it's great to see that Netflix are finally putting something big on about wrestling, and I hope it's a success so we can finally get that Hulk Hogan movie that Netflix have got in their back pocket the one that's meant to be Chris Hemsworth playing him.
I thought you meant the Gawker video. Sorry.
Oh well, they did that as well. But I mean, it's Netflix are supposed to have the rights to doing that Hulk Hogan movie, the actual Hulkamania movie that Chris Hemsworth tentatively signed off to play.
Risky.
I think it's him, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Daniel Radcliffe might be involved in that. I think there was rumours he might do Macho Man.
Class.
Which Harry would have been mental. Aye.
Harry Potter cutting a bit in the wrestling, and that'd be quite good. I mean, he was really good as Weird Al Yankovic in the Weird Al Yankovic biopic. He was really good in that.
Rumours that he might be Wolverine.
I could see that. I could see that. By the Hulk biopic seems class. They need, if Vince McMahon is featured in that, they need to get Glenn Howerton from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes.
Vince, because he like not just because he looks like a young Vince, but he's an absolute sociopath as well. The wrestlers thing, it does look pretty class. And again, it's one of these things that it's so heavily featured in Al Snow from what you're saying there. but it seems like the type of thing that Al Snow would be so against in terms of exposing the business.
I think that's why I'm excited about it for him, because he's going to be like a pure grumpy bastard in it, the whole thing, the whole time. He's like, God damn it, we're exposing a business here. We're going, you're a heel, you're a babyface, you shouldn't be on camera again, a motherfucker's getting separate changing rooms, that kind of shit.
Aye, the old school thing come through. And again, it'll probably do a lot to for the casual Netflix viewer that's interested in murder documentaries and stuff like that. It'll be good to get that insight into it. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
I hope there's no Me Too shit that comes out of it though, because it's that you wouldn't put it beyond Netflix to have found out that some shit like that was going on and they would include it in the documentary.
Aye, it's hopefully a bit murky, or hopefully not as murky as that anyway. But I think, in terms of we always love a positive TV page on here, and with what's with what's to come next on the podcast to close us out, I think we should stick with the positive side of things. So Lewis, you're going to take the TV pages for the recommendations. Did you say it was Cultaholics TikTok? Yep. Sweet. So that will be the recommendation for that. So guys, thank you for joining us on the Daft Sheet this week. As I said, we had no centrefold this week, but we are going to end with a quiz. We've not done a kind of quiz section on here for a wee while, just due to timing issues and people being able to come on at certain times and whatnot. So I thought, what's something that we can all get behind and enjoy that's kind of topical to wrestling? And I was thinking to myself, someone who has kind of revitalized themselves in AEW recently after seeing Luchasaurus become the TNT champion is Christian Cage. And again, I know we've talked about death quite a bit on this over the last few weeks because of Bray Wyatt and stuff like that, but I'm sorry, Christian Cage's dead dad shtick fucking kills me. I love it, right? I'm a bastard, right? I've never met my dad, he's probably dead, right? So it resonates with me a wee bit as well, just like he's cutting with it. And there's been so many memes and things about that. Even, at the All Out press conference, he came out and said, he asked everyone, how's everyone's dad? So with that in mind, I've come up with the Christian Index, okay? And basically what this is going to be is we're going to see who Christian can feud with in later life. So what I'm going to do is I've got six wrestlers' kids' names. And I'm going to give you the names, and you need to tell me if you think that their dad is dead or alive, and you'll get a point for what you get right. And if it's a dead one, then that's who Christian is going to end up feuding with. I've got numbers 1 to 6 here. So do one of you want to take the odds and one of you want to take the evens?
I'm easy.
All right, I'll go odds.
So Steve's going odds and Lewis is going evens. So we'll go odds first. So number one, the child's name is Liberty, Steve. Is Liberty's dad dead or the fucking hell? Is Liberty's dad dead or alive?
It's alive. I'm pretty sure that's Cody and Brandy's daughter.
It is Liberty Runnels. Is the daughter of the well and truly alive at time of the Corbin Cody Rhodes.
The child that ended racism.
Yep. So Christian is not going to be going after Liberty anytime soon.
Christ.
Number two is first of the evening, sorry for you, Steve, is Brooklyn. Brooklyn Rose, to be precise. Is Brooklyn Rose's dad dead or alive?
I'm thinking with that. That's I'd say Brooklyn's quite a newer name to call a child. However, on the flip of the coin,
I think I'm going to have to go dead.
Brooklyn Rose is one of Randy Orton's daughters. although he's been off screen for quite a while, that would you would assume that he had departed this world. He is still alive at time of recording. So, Steve, we'll come back to you for one of the odds here, and we've got Ruby. R-U-B-Y, Ruby, a name that I find very hard to say because I'm a speech impediment, which means I can't sing along to Kaiser Chiefs songs as well. But is Ruby's dad dead? This particular Ruby. Ruby, there may be other Rubies that are daughters of wrestlers, but this one in particular.
Ruby's one of those names that it's you only meet really old women called Ruby or wee kids called Ruby because it's one of those names that was like common in the 50s and 60s, then died out in the 70s and 80s, but has now made a comeback post-millennium. Oh, just because of the Liz Average here, I'll say dead.
Ruby is the sister of Lyric and the daughter of the very much alive Edge and Beth Phoenix.
I'm shocking getting that wrong because they were at ringside as well for the Sheamus match, weren't they?
Yep. Also, just when you say that, I saw quite a funny. I can't remember if it was in the Discord or on Twitter, but it was a picture of Chad Gable's kids at ringside during his match, and it was like the Young Bucks sitting at ringside because the two of them had long hair and headbands on. Thought that was quite funny. Popped me. Right, we'll come back to you, Lewis.
Are you sure it's his?
Well,
he's going to be tracking Nick and Matt's journeys around the years that they were born.
Right, we're talking about dead dads, not illegitimate dads. we'll come on to you, Lewis, for the next even one, and this child is called Kristen, Kristen. Does she have a deceased father or one who is still walking the earth? This particular Kristen.
See, I don't know what mood you were in when you made this quiz. I don't know if we're just going for all our lives here and you're just not wanting to bring any more death into Kristen with a K. See, with the K's making me think quite young. But I'm just going to go completely against my gut again and say dead.
Kristen has a dead dad. Her dad is Jim Neidhart, and Kristen is the sister of Natalia Neidhart. She is the daughter of someone who's been planted for a couple of years now. We'll come on to, back to you for your last...
The one that JR made the pervy comment about on Instagram.
No, it's not Jennifer. It's not Jennifer. There's a third Neidhart sister.
Ah, there's three of them. Jesus.
There's three of them. Yep. So it's not Jennifer. We'll come back to you, Steve, for your final odd one here. Now this chap's name is Hank, and is his dad doing push-ups or pushing up the daisies?
Hank, well, it is an old guy's name, but it sounds too obvious for it to be dead. I'm trying to... Who, is there anyone today that would call their son Hank? Like, it wouldn't have shocked me if, like, Stone Cold had a son called Hank, but, like, I don't think Stone Cold's got any kids. Or Undertaker, maybe. Undertaker does have a son, I'm sure.
I think he's got a daughter with Michelle McCool as well.
Aye. But they don't have a son from a previous relationship as well.
We say that off the neck.
Aye. Right, just get over with dead.
It is dead, but it's not the dead man's kid. No. It is Kurt Hennig's son, Hank Hennig, brother of Joe Hennig, Curtis Axel.
Okay.
Yep. So I've with the dead ones, I've not picked like any kind of like recently dead ones because that I feel that would be insensitive or less insensitive than this whole thing. So did you say dead or alive there? Sorry, Steve.
I said dead.
You said dead, so you get that one right. Now, we'll come on to the last one for you, Lewis. And the kid's name is Lacey. Is Lacey's dad dead or alive? Like Pete Burns once said. No, that was the band name, wasn't it?
Aye.
DOA.
I'm gonna say I'm gonna say dead, but because that would make it two all. If this person is dead, can you not tell us who it is? And we've both got to guess who the person is.
Oh, that's a, that,
if this is right.
That'd be good.
Right, if, but I'm going to say dead.
And Lacey Von Erich's dad is well and truly dead.
Right.
I had to look up which of the Von Erichs it was that was dead in relation to Lacey. And it was Kerry, the Texas Tornado. Mind Lacey Von Erich. Mind like when she was in TNA and she was the absolute shit. She was awful. Oh, when she was at some WrestleCon thing as well, and she was laughing about her dad being dead to Ted DiBiase or something like that.
She
was a fucking fruit loop. But again, that's maybe a symptom of losing her dad at a young age. I don't know. Can't really judge that way. That makes it two each on my count there. So, oh no, I've already told you who the dead dad
is. Think of another
one, guys. Sorry, Lewis. Oh, no, because it took me ages to find these ones, and I'll end up saying something really nasty if I look up anymore. So of the three dead dads there, Jim Neidhart, Kurt Hennig, and Kerry Von Erich, which one do you think that Christian... Whose kid do you think Christian should go after next?
I would probably say... it would probably have to be Lacey.
Probably the Von Erich kid. Aye. Because just the amount of traction he can get out of the
family.
The Von Erich...
It's like the whole family. A multi-pack for them.
For my money, the saddest story in history of wrestling is the fall of the Von Erichs and just how horrible that whole situation was. What, four of them all died.
I think I listened to, was it that talked about Behind the Bastards before? Was it you?
That was
it yourself? I'm sure I listened to Von Erich one that they put on, and it talks through the whole thing. I'm sure it was them that had it. If not, it was another one. But
aye, there's a good.
They talked about that, and it was wild.
There was a good Behind the Titan thrown about it that came on YouTube about five or six years ago that really delved deep into the Von Erich dynasty and the tragedies that happened in it. And when you find out what an absolute ruthless bastard Fritz Von Erich was, then you'll understand how so many of them died at a young age. Right, yep. Ric Flair even brought up on the when he was on Joe Rogan, like he didn't say anything bad about Fritz Von Erich, he just said that Fritz really pushed those boys hard and as it turned out, way too hard.
Yeah, we'll probably see that in the Iron Claw film that's coming out soon with Zac Efron, MJF, and the fella out of the bear as well. And who knows, Christian Cage might turn up at the end with his turtleneck and a dead dad.
Just quickly, because I want to also say there was a great Reddit thread I saw on the Squared Circle subreddit where somebody says, name a fictional character that Christian Cage could have a feud with. So, like, obviously, Batman, Harry Potter, Tony Soprano, like, just any major fictional character you could think of. Basically, every superhero that had, because they all have daddy problems, Iron Man, Spider-Man, the whole lot of them.
No, that's a class way. And, again, not meaning to end the podcast on a morbid note, but I just thought, you know, if Christian is doing some great work, great heel work with this, and you know, why should he get all the fun of laughing at dead dads? And I'm going to end it there before I get myself cancelled. This has probably been the worst one for me.
This is the darkest one we've done.
Well, I don't know, because I've mentioned Joseph Fitzel 9/11 and Bin Laden in previous ones as well. So this might be tops it.
Fucking 2023 roundup at the end of the year.
Aye. Anyway, on that note, thank you very much, Steve and Lewis, for coming on to this week's episode of The Daft Sheet. If you're still interested in the main show, I know it's been off for a while. I know there's been a bit of kind of discontent on the Discord in regards to what's going on with that, but you know, if you are still looking to support the main show, subscribe to the Discord, get your money in on there, get in touch with us on Twitter. No one interacts with the tweets that we put out on this, but I know that he's watching it, because I can see the numbers, and I know that we're roughly still in the 800-850 listener region, so thanks to everyone who's for listening for the last 12 episodes that we've done now. I think if we get to 25, we'll do something special. We might say to John to get us on the t-shirt website and get a t-shirt out there. I think, you know how you see all like the football shirts? I can't remember the name of the company that's doing like the wrestling football shirts. I think one of them would be pretty cool. Wrestling.
If we could
get that commissioned. Maybe your Patreon money could go towards that. Who knows? Who the fuck knows what's happening with that? But anyway, for the next week, until we return with the Daft Sheet, however you enjoy your wrestling, keep it daft and keep it sheety.